Welcome back to Citywide Blackout, the podcast that brings you the best artists from around the world. I'm your host, Max Bowen. In this episode, I continue my interviews with authors who will be at the Rhode Island Author Expo on December 7th. Candace Breen talks about her autobiography, After the Darkness, which chronicles her experiences with childhood incest, rape, abuse, and domestic violence, and how she found a path to healing and a new life. Candace holds nothing back, both in this interview and in the book, and we look at what led her to share the story and the reaction of family and friends, both good and bad. One of the things that I found amazing is the hope that Candace has, that others can find a way out of the darkness that she lived in for so many years. It's really inspiring, and I sincerely hope people could take the time to read her book and to know that they're not alone and that they have nothing to be ashamed of. If you're the victim of rape or domestic violence, there are a number of places you can go to seek help. If you check the page where this podcast is posted, you'll find links to a number of resources, including the Rape Crisis Center, the National Domestic Violence Hotline, and the Child Help National Child Abuse Hotline. Please, if you're in trouble, there are places you can go, and help is always available. Welcome back, everyone, to CDY Blackout. This is Max Bowen here, and I'm continuing my coverage of the Rhode Island Author Expo authors. And I'm now talking to Candace Breen. She is one of the many writers who will be there. And Candace, welcome to the show. It's awesome talking to you. So I want to start with your new book, After the Darkness. This is an autobiography. And how you survived, just saying, childhood incest, rape, abuse, and domestic violence. And now I have to go throw up.
It's understandable. It wasn't an easy piece to write for me either.
I can't imagine it would be. I mean, just talking about this had to be really, really tough for you. I actually read your signed X story on your website, which you give details about everything you went through. I guess the thing I really want to know is, putting all this out there, why did you want to do it?
Well, you know, Max, it took me 20 years actually to be able to put that story out there. When I was actually going through it, I would write a journal because I intuited somehow that would help me deal with it, because I had no one to talk to or confide in, and no friends or anything. So I kept a journal and I'd write the details. But, you know, during the early years when it was actually happening, I would get mad and I would scribble across the paper and I would flush them down the toilet. And so, I've written it and thrown it out multiple times. And when I had my first child, who is a girl, our daughter, and I held her in my arms, something clicked in me. Something said that this is precious baby, because I never thought I'd be a mother. I feared trusting a man in my life enough to raise a family with, because of what happened to me. And I was afraid that would happen to my daughter. And here she was in my arms. And I said, I have to do it for her and for all the little girls and boys out there who may be suffering and feel they have nowhere to go. And when I was younger, I made a promise to myself that someday I would tell someone. And I didn't know it would be 20 years before that would happen. And so I held my daughter, and then I said, well, I got to get some. I started with baby steps. So I joined the Rape Abuse National Network in Washington, D.C. And that gave me a lot of opportunities to share my story. I was at the State House in front of so many people, and it was very, very scary. And I was interviewed in newspapers, on radio shows, and in People magazine, which was really big for me. And then I started a blog, because I thought that I was working my way up to being able to talk about it. And then a friend of mine said, so when are you gonna write a book? And I said, well, I don't know, when I'm ready. And I kid you not, in 2000, May, June of 2018, I sat down, and in 2 weeks, I wrote the book nonstop. I shielded myself from my family, And I was writing and crying and just, I said, I have to get it all out, every single detail, because I thought if I kept it in my mind, I would still have dreams and it would still be there. But if I got it on paper, that will free up, you know, other people to be able to talk about those details that no one really wants to talk about because it's scary and embarrassing and taboo. And I felt a lot of encouragement from a lot of my readers whom I've met, and some have sent me letters, fan mails and things like that, and, you know, who have encouraged me to keep talking, even though I know it was hard for some people to read. I've lost a couple of friends because I'd shared my story, and although some really close friends that I've known for years who, and I just said, well, then they have their own issues. It hurt, but there's so many others out there who to me, who are the important ones who need to hear this so they can be encouraged. And so this can stop being so taboo and people can know that there's notice the signs and be active and notice when people are going through these things. And also for those people who are going through these things, for there to know that there is light after that dark period. Things can get better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what my life has been. I spent time in the dark, what I called my dark period, and this long road of darkness. And I felt I was all alone. And I didn't ever think that I would ever see my way out of it. Yeah.
And I'm very glad you did. Really.
Thank you.
Very much so. I mean, that reading your story, I was almost in tears.
Yeah.
I thought, holy crap, how can someone go through all this? How can they still be here, frankly? You mentioned that there's people who didn't want your story told. They want you to not say it. But I want to talk about the ones who were with you, who were there every step of the way and said, tell your story. Mm-hmm. Was there any one person who was particularly like the flag bearer here who was like, yes, let's do this. You got to tell your story.
My husband.
Oh, really?
Yes. You know, before he and I When he proposed to me, when he first proposed to me, he didn't know anything about my past. And I had written some autobiographical poetry that I had not published. I was just writing it because that's the way I got through things. I wrote poetry and I wrote journals. And I said to him, are you sure you want to marry me? You know, after I said yes and all that stuff, one day we were just hanging out and I said, are you sure you want to still marry me? He said, yes. And I said, well, then you should read this and then tell me if you still want to marry me. So he read it and he was so moved. And he said, this is not your fault. This is not your fault. You didn't ask for any of this. Why would I turn my back on you? And he has been there through every up and down. And I mean, he's really phenomenal. He is really awesome. He is the only person that I could actually bear everything to tell. And he, when I was out there at the State House for Walk a Mile in Her Shoes, when I had to read to give a speech about my story in front of all those people, he was there with our daughter. We only had one child at the time, but our daughter was, she was a little bit over a year. She was in a stroller and he was pushing her and he wore the high heels because the men had to wear the high heels and walk a mile. And we got, you know, he's like 6'2", so it was actually hilarious.
now were they big heels? Were they like
We went online and got drag queen heels for him and he loved them. He was wearing them down the, and he was had some great balance, let me tell you.
Hey, you know, good on him. If you can make it work, you make it work.
Right. And I mean, and he has been very, very supportive and encouraging when other people were like, are you sure? Are you sure she's damaged goods? That's what I had been referred to many times, that damaged goods. People treated me like I had leprosy or something. Stay away from my children. One of my friends had told me, stay away from my children. I don't want to hear anything about that. And I said, I'm a mom too. What are you saying about me? I'm a mom too. But it's that fear of exposure or making people uncomfortable. That's one of the things. People are so uncomfortable and there's such a taboo that that when you try to share something, I mean, you're automatically, you don't get any more courage to go on. And you, everyone needs to have a cheerleader in their corner. And for me, that was my husband, because I didn't have any friends really. And the people at my colleagues, they were not supportive. So it was him. And I just said, look, I'm just going to tell him. And if he walks away, he walks away. If he doesn't, he doesn't. Because I was so used to people walking away. And he didn't. And he's still here 13 years later. And and he's my biggest cheerleader. You know, he really is. When I came out with this book, there were a lot of people in our circle who questioned whether or not I should say things like this. And would try to get him to make me be quiet. And he said, I'm not going to tell her to do that. She has a right to share her story. She has a right to tell it. And even though my mother is heavily talked about in this book, because there was a very dysfunctional relationship with her. And I was afraid initially that she would read it. She ended up reading it after my grandmother passed away this past April. My wonderful, beloved grandmother passed away, and my mother went into her home and was going through her stuff and found my book and started reading it. And then I got a nasty letter in the mail saying that I'm not family and all of this, but it's okay because she said that anyway. So.
Wow. Well, first off, your husband is an awesome guy.
Thank you. Absolute
trooper. You know, I mean, yes. I think everyone should have someone like that in their mm-hmm. lives to, mm-hmm. in some cases, walk in high heel shoes because yeah. they want to stand by you. No, but, yeah. but joking aside, and I definitely joke too much, but it's it is okay. wonderful that you had someone to be there for you, to be that flag bearer, to say, no, yeah. if you want to do this, not mm-hmm. only will I not stop you, but I will stand by you the entire way. It's one thing yeah. to say, oh, sure, go ahead, do what you want. It's right. another to say, no, I will walk with you to the state house. Mm-hmm. I will be there for you. I will hold your hand. I will not walk away.
Right, right. And he's proven true all along, you know, all along. And we're very, our little family here is a very supportive knit family. My children don't know, they know the book cover of the book. They don't know the details. They're kind of too young, I think. One is 11 and the other one's 8. But they're very supportive when I go to events and do things. They show up, except for the sensitive stuff. They're not there at that. But other my other books, because I have 4 other books out, and they're there as well with me supporting and being there all the way. So that's really helped me greatly, because, you know, especially because this, all of this has an effect on you mentally, and it has on me, where I've doubted myself. I've been very insecure. There were times when I was suicidal, and especially when I was young, when I was younger, going through stuff like that, because when you feel that there's no one there, that's what you do. And that's what I did. That's what I tried to do. But I'm actually glad that I'm here, because I feel that my voice is helping other people. And when I'm helping other people, I'm also helping myself. The more I talk about it, the stronger I feel. It's not something that happened to someone else or in a book or, well, my book, but, you know, in a movie or something like that. It's something that I lived through. And that I endured. And when I doubt myself, or when I feel, my husband always says this, you know, when you doubt yourself or when you feel insecure, just think about what you've overcome, what you've overcome. There's some people who had every single opportunity and threw it away, and you had none, and you made opportunities for yourself. I also, when I was a teacher, a young teacher, people looked at me like I was this professional. And I remember some person said, because I worked in the inner city, and one of my colleagues said to me, well, these kids didn't grow up privileged like you. I said, oh, you don't know anything about me. Privileged. Oh, no way. No way. If only. And I mean, they would just because of the way I carried myself, that, you know, I didn't owe anyone a dime. I put myself through school. I worked 2 jobs during college and went to school full time. And I actually had to run away from home because my father was abusing me and he would not let me go to school. And, you know, I didn't even have any home support, none of that stuff. So there was no support, no encouragement. And sometimes I wonder what was the fire that kept me going when I didn't have any support whatsoever during my younger years? Because everyone said I'd be a failure. My half-sister said I'd become a prostitute. And all this is in my book. Yes, you're never going to make it. You're going to become a prostitute to support yourself. And I was like, oh, I would never even think about that, but that's interesting. You know, and it was hard. And you know, no one gave me a dime for college or anything, nothing. I was disowned. I was tossed aside. I was told I was going to be a failure. But I thought that this was my only way out. I had to run away. I had to go to school. I had to work hard. I had my own apartment. I paid all my bills, and I maintained dean's list in college. I lost it with astronomy. I got a C in astronomy.
I actually barely, and I want to stress that word, barely passed astronomy. So I went to it thinking, oh, it'll be just like science-y Star Trek stuff. And then it's like, wow. And then I think the first week I thought, that's a lot of math.
Yeah, I was like, oh no. So astronomy was what killed me. And so I didn't get the magna, whatever, the summa cum laude or something.
Curse
like, oh,
you,
well.
Astronomy.
That's all right. I know. So that's what killed me. But nevertheless, I think I did well.
Hey, you know, if astronomy is the only thing you didn't get, unless you're doing that for a living, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, I never wanted to be an astronomer, so it's okay. But you know, so that stuff was it was pretty difficult, but you know, and there was some internal drive that pushed me to continue to grow. But even though, you know, I thought I had made it, it wasn't the end. It wasn't the end of my struggles, because I grew up I was not allowed to date in high school. So I had no dating experience whatsoever. When I got to college, I knew nothing. So what happened? I ended up in a domestic violence relationship for 4 years where I was nearly killed. And I do talk about that in my book. It's actually a very significant, significant part of my 20s, because, I was still struggling. I was, you know, in the professional world and also hiding what was going on with a live-in boyfriend that I had at the time. And, I so wanted, because I never had anyone to love me, I so wanted someone to care about me. So I forced it on, you know, I would say, I'm going to make this work. I can change them. No. I didn't know any of that, though. I didn't have anyone to tell me. So I didn't know that. Just because I was an adult didn't mean I knew everything. And a lot of people I worked with didn't even know what I was going through, the scars and things that I had on my arms. And I would wear long sleeve jackets, you know, dress suit jackets to cover them, because no one knew. The only time when people did start to notice is when I was actually stripped naked, beat, had a pair of dirty underwear shoved in my throat and pinned to the bed. And, you know, he held his hands over my mouth to suffocate me. And my lips were swollen and I couldn't go to work like that. They were swollen and I was beat up. So I had to take time out, and police had called my job one time. And that's when people at work began to find out about it. But I was still ashamed. I was ashamed because I thought everyone was doing so much better than I. So it was very shameful. But, you know, it did take some time to stop blaming myself for everything. And except we can't, what a lot of victims need to know is you cannot control the actions of someone else. And you should not take it all on yourself. Everyone has their own free will. It was not because you're dressed a certain way or you, no. That person does not have the right to take advantage of you, no matter what you look like or where you are. It does not give the person the right to do that. So And that's what we all have to realize. There's such a taboo, and it makes me angry a lot when I hear this stuff. Oh, what was she wearing? Or she asked for it, or things like that. No, that's not the case. It's not the case. And it's wrong. It's wrong for people to say those type of things to people who have gone through unimaginable things, things that will stay with them forever. You know, just because I wrote this book and I talk about it and stuff, there's still residual feelings sometimes, or discomfort, and sometimes embarrassment. You know, I didn't think I was worthy of anything, and I thought that people looked at me as though I were dirty, and which people often do. They look at you like you're dirty, that you're tainted. And people used to call me damaged goods. No one wanted me. And I was unloved and unwanted. And it was very difficult. It was very difficult to live like that. But when I shared my story, I realized that there's so many other people out there. And so many people who needed to hear this story because they needed help too. And I think that sort of world, global communal spirit is what keeps us strong and what makes other people step forward. And people just think this is not okay. This is not okay. I know that Me Too movement has gained a lot of momentum. But I was like, all right, enough of the celebrity people. What about the average person, the poor person who's going through it and no one hears their cries? You know, I mean, enough of the celebrities. That's okay with the celebrities, blah, blah, blah. What about everyone else? We're not looking at everyone else, you know? And that's also why People Magazine did a story on me, because they had the Mackenzie Phillips a couple of years ago. It was in 2009. And they talked about her story. And then they wanted an average person. So that's why they got me. So an average person for the people to, you know, have it juxtaposed. There's not just celebrities. It's your next door neighbor. And so I know I'm going on and on and on. I'm very passionate about this topic. So I do have a tendency to go on and on, but I'm trying to help people with my story and heal myself and heal everyone else.
How do you heal from this? Is that possible to just completely heal from this? Or is it more of a healing enough that you can continue on?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, like when you have surgery, all right, and you know, say you've gotten you've a hernia, okay, and you've had the surgery and you've recovered from it, but it's not the same. When it heals, your skin does not go right back to the way everything was pre-surgery. What you learn how to do is you learn how to cope life with that. You adjust. And so with this, you know, trauma, it doesn't go away. It doesn't go away. I mean, you talk about it and you do learn how to deal, and you understanding helps a lot. Understanding why that person did it, and understanding that it wasn't your fault and all that does help heal you to the point where you can cope with life, that you can live your life day to day. Now, it's not to say that you won't fall back, and there'll be times that you are very, very sad. That does happen, but you can't erase it. You can't say it didn't happen. Just like when you have surgery, you know, or give birth and they're like, oh, my body's not the same. Well, you're not going to go back to pre-baby most of the time. Okay. So, but for most of us who are not like on Hollywood diets or whatever, you're not going to go back to what you were. You have a new life with knowing that what once was is sort of a shadow. It's sort of a shadow, but you have to continue on. You have to live your new life. We have to continue. I mean, I used to have so many nightmares. I could not sleep. When I was pregnant with my daughter, I used to have nightmares where I could actually see my father walking down the corridor, walking down the upstairs hallway towards our bedroom. And I would scream at him, and I would cover my belly and say, "Do not come near me. Get away." He had been long since deceased. And I dreamt that there he was visiting me, trying to hurt me. And when I was pregnant with my son, I was afraid. I was afraid that he would be like my father, and I really didn't want him to be nasty like that, because my father had no respect for women or girls. And it's still now I can actually sleep without nightmares. I am not afraid anyone's going to come haunt me in the night and take my children. And what has given me courage is the support and speaking about it. That has been so important to me. Really getting the support. I mean, there's always people out there who don't want you to talk. There's always people out there who do not care or don't want to hear it. I want you to say, hush, hush. And I remember when I was my first radio show interview about my story, I had asked an acquaintance of mine if she listened to it. And she says, "I can't listen to that stuff." And I was like, "Oh, thank you for your support." Thank you. But she was on a different level. She wasn't ready to hear it. And she probably never will be. And that's okay. That's not for her to hear. It's not meant for her ears. It's meant for the ears of the people who read it. At first, I didn't think I would sell one book. One book. But I remember one month I had looked at my audio sales, because it's also an audio book, and it was 203 audiobooks. And I was blown out of my mind. I said, "Oh my gosh, I wonder what people are thinking when they're reading it, you know?" And I hear things, and people send me notes, and I like to hear, because that makes me feel, it gives me a lot of encouragement to continue on with this message. It is a difficult read. It is. But it was even more difficult to go through it. And that's what we need to realize. There, when people say, "I can't read it, I don't want to read it, I can't deal with it." Imagine the person who went through it. I mean, sometimes I look at it and I said, "Oh my word, did that actually happen to me?" But it did. I remember everything. I don't know why, but I do. And it stays with me. But I'm stronger every day. Every day I'm stronger. Sometimes I slide back and I get into a depression, because you don't come out of this with a perfect. But that's part of the game. That's part of it. And you have to learn strategies. I wrote a sequel to this book, After the Darkness. I wrote a book, Today I Feel Ugly, which was like a sequel to After the Darkness. But what it deals with was strategies that helped me deal with the negative impact these events were having on my life. Because you do come out of it feeling pretty beat up.
One thing you mentioned that I think everyone should be taking into account is the phrase, "Imagine what I went through." Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. it's important for people to not only just accept that these things happen. You know, like you said, you know, it's one thing to say, "Oh, I can't read this. I can't bear to read this." It's like, but this person went through this thing. This thing doesn't go away because you ignore it. Mm-hmm. And saying, "Oh, I can't read this story. It's too harsh." Like, well, just this is not fiction. This is real mm-hmm. life. This really happened. This is totally real. And I think that by saying, "Oh, I can't read it, it's too hard," it's not making the problem worse, but it's not moving towards a solution either.
Right.
I don't want to paint people like that as the enemy, because it's not a, you know, for or against situation, right. But it is a situation where you have to, this is reality, and reality sucks yeah. sometimes. It sucks really hard sometimes. Mm-hmm. Turning away from it, putting your fingers in your ears, doesn't help, okay?
That's right.
On your side, you have a brief excerpt from the book on the homepage. Yeah. There was yeah. one line that really caught me. It was, you were at your father's funeral. Mm-hmm. You were singing Amazing Grace. And mm-hmm. there's a party that wants to be furious at the guy. Be like, "Ha ha, you're dead. Good. I hope you rot down there, you know." Instead, though, you find yourself feeling sorry for this guy. Sorry that he became such a, you know, reprehensible human being. Sorry that what happened to him was so horrible that it made him so horrible. I guess the question I have for you is, how do you feel about him now?
I still feel the same way. I still feel sorry for him. And, you know, I did forgive him. Some people are like, what the hell? But I did. I did. I spent many years being angry. Oh, I was so angry. Angry to the point where, like, it was very soon after I had been being raped and abused by him. And I would see him sitting on the couch with his back towards the hallway. My bedroom was at the hallway. And we had a machete in the kitchen. And I was like, one time I was thinking I could get that machete and just slice his throat right there, because that's how angry I was. I'm glad I didn't. Probably wouldn't have been in training school. But but I had been angry and bitter, but I didn't like how it made me feel. I didn't like that, because that wasn't my nature. And I would say, what the heck? How am I going to deal with this? And when I ran away from home and I got my own apartment and stuff like that, I kid you not, I spent a long time secluded in silence and in meditation and writing and just being out in nature. I would just sit early. I would get up super early because I was always an early riser in the morning, and I would just sit just thinking. And I would just think, people are not just born like that. And then I did some digging. I did some digging. And one of my half-brothers had contacted me. And we began this relationship, you know, like, you know, brother-sister relationship. And he had told me that our father had been sexually abused by his mother. And she made him do stuff to him that he was not, you know, comfortable. Well, he was not, you know, and then that made him disrespect all women, and it made him so bitter and angry inside. And that's how he became just an awful being. And he was also angry because his father wouldn't allow him to go to school and do things like that. So he was never able to move up in society. So he was just one bitter person. And he was angry with my mother, who had cheated on him. And there I was, this child left with him. And so what did he do? He projected all that onto me. I heard somewhere that you should forgive others, not for their sake, but for yours. And I couldn't do it. I wasn't ready. And then, you know, after I had a lot of space away from him, I wrote him a letter. He probably couldn't read it because he only had third grade education. But I wrote him a letter telling him, everything that you've done, I still remember it. It hurts. I will never be normal, but I forgive you because I know you were hurt. And I also read somewhere that people who hurt others have often been hurt. And so that's why he never had an opportunity to live a full life with a good education, with a nice family who loved him, a father who loved him. And so once I did that, now I had to begin learning how to live my life with knowing all of that stuff that happened to me. But understanding, my husband had said this, understanding is what helps us. Understanding why someone did that, putting yourself in their shoes, often helps. And that doesn't mean that what they did was right. But that's why I was able to do that at his funeral. I mean, at his wake. That's why I was able to do that. I really felt sad for him. And I remember I'd gotten down on my knees and I prayed to all the spirits and said, just please help him. Help him in his transition. Help him to ask to get right before he moves on to his next level of existence. It's easy to be bitter. And it's easy to be angry. But what good does that do? It doesn't help you. That person's going on doing their thing. Why you're stuck with that bitterness that's eating you up and that prevents you from living a full and happy life. And I wanted to be happy. I didn't want to feel that yucky feeling inside. And so that's why.
Does it ever come back, though, the anger?
Not in a long time. Not in a long... It used to come back a lot, but honestly, not in a long time. Even when I was writing this, I was crying. I was crying because it was painful, not because I was angry with him. And I really, really, let me tell you, Max, I had so much anger that I couldn't even talk about it without cursing up a storm. I'm serious. I couldn't even, I just had every nasty word to say about him. But it hasn't in a long time. He was this big thing I had to make right. I had to be able to make myself live. And it was very, very hard. Very hard. And I had to be able to understand. And I did spend a lot of time thinking and writing and asking questions and holy moly, so I can understand. Same thing with my mother. Yeah, I had to understand. And I had to accept that I didn't have a family that loved me. And that was hard because you feel like trash. That here's this unwanted person that no one wanted. And that's how I felt. Which made me a mother who just went overboard loving her children because I wanted to make sure they knew that I love them. They know that without a doubt that I have their back, that I love them, and I would not let anyone hurt them. And they know that.
Now, you mentioned before that you've received a lot of letters from readers. People have reached out to you. How does it make you feel knowing that you become sort of a focal point for all these people, knowing that they are coming to you and saying, I went through this. Thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, you know, I had made this promise to myself when I was about, I don't know, I think it was 13. I made a promise to myself that when I got out of this darkness, I would help someone else. I said I would help someone else. I made that promise to myself because I felt I didn't have anyone to help me and I didn't know what to do. And when I've had people come up to me and hug me at lectures, at speeches and things like that. I've had people cry in front of me right at author events or book signings, things like that. And I just hug them. And I don't feel any ego for myself. No, I don't feel any ego. What I feel is that person is being helped. Yes, it was worth it. This is what I was supposed to do. I went through this and came out strong for those broken people who need someone to say, it's okay. It's okay. You're not bad. You know, you're not bad. You're a wonderful, beautiful person. And people, it sounds so simple, but it really means the world to people who are suffering or who are being oppressed. It means the world to them. And it's hard to make people understand when they haven't been through it, how alone you feel, how isolated, because that's what abusers do. They isolate you. My father did not let me have friends. I could not see friends. I could not go outside and play. I could not even walk to the library around the corner by myself. I couldn't even walk to the bus stop by myself. When I got off the bus at school and I walked down the street, he was standing on the porch and God help me if there were a boy walking with me who happened to live on my street, he would cuss me to no end. And I wasn't even doing anything. They live on the street too. But he would cuss me out and accuse me of doing stuff. And that's what abusers do. And I learned a lot about behaviors of abusers and things like that. This helped me to learn a lot about different signs to recognize and how to know when someone else is going through and stuff to help them. And so when people come up to me and they send me letters, I mean, I'm always touched. I am always touched and I cry a tear up, you know, I do tear up, but I feel that yes, that person, it touched someone and that is good because that person who has been touched with it, even if they're not a survivor, a victim, they can go and spread that to someone else. spread that story to someone else, or be able to recognize when someone else is going through it and be able to help that person because they heard someone else's story of what it's actually, they saw through my eyes of what it's actually like to be in that situation. And so they'll be able to help someone else. So, you know, what we do affects everyone else. So it's, you know, like a ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's important. It's just helping the cause and helping the world. And this should not be something that's taboo and thrown under the table, that there are people who need help and, you know, and recognize the signs and know how to help people and know what they need, you know what they need. So I put myself, I bared my soul, put myself out there to the world, and I feel stronger every day. And every time I get a letter or someone says something to me, I get stronger and stronger. So I can help someone else. And that's a long-winded answer, but that's how I feel.
One of the things I love is the passion that you have for this, that you want to help so many people. And I hope you can help them all, really. I hope people, even by listening to us talking, hope they can maybe be helped even in some small way. I imagine there's no blueprint towards getting through something like this. Everyone's story is different. Everyone's situation is different.
That's right.
Having said that, from what you've experienced, are there some methods or techniques that people can use that do seem to sort of cross over the stories that most people can kind of incorporate that can help them to deal with this kind of pain?
It's as you said, we all do have different stories and backgrounds. But the first thing is to know it was not your fault. I mean, that is the first thing that we need to know. No, because we will blame ourselves and we will feel bad and say, I asked for it. And then people are telling you, you asked for it, or what were you wearing, stuff like that. But the first thing you need to know is it is not your fault. You cannot control the way someone else treats you. You cannot control that. And then seek out help. I mean, now the help is everywhere. And like there are places that they can go, women to join a house, like here, places that they can go and that you can go on into internet, but it'll make sure it'll ask you if you're safe, and it'll automatically, you know, if you're not safe, it'll automatically like black screen it or something like that. So in case there's a abuser coming behind you or something like that, it'll, yeah, they have that. They actually shut down or something like that to keep it safe, to keep you safe. So they can't go back. And there are actually several of these domestic violence, local domestic violence shelters have websites where you, little links on that you can go on. It'll make sure they're safe links. Yeah, safe links. So your abuser can't get back on your computer and find out where you've been, you know, your history and things. It does that. When I was going through all this, there weren't so many resources readily available, but there are now. And people, they should definitely reach one of these places. And always, I used to run an online women's group. It was a mother's group. It was called Survivors of Domestic Rape, Domestic Violence. And we had about almost 400 people in it, 400 mothers in it who had been, who are survivors of abuse, rape, incest, all of those things. And it was a safe group for them. And we would, there were many people who were encouraged to get out of their situation, to just get out. And if you are in a situation that is unsafe, get out, get out. I mean, wait for when the person's not there and go. There are so many more resources available today. And once you're at these places, I mean, they have lots of services for you. They have advocacy programs. They hook you up with, you know, make sure you're safe, food, and, you know, they do take care of you. They do take care of you. I mean, things would probably have been different if I had those resources available to me when I was young. And if you're a young child, school counselors, school psychologists, they're there, and they're more trained in that stuff than they were back then. And they have special services as well, social workers, psychologists, things like that, who you can confide in and whose job it is to ensure that you're safe and that you're protected. and things like that. But those are the things that you have to, those are the first steps. And then you got to do the dirty work. You have to do the dirty work. And it's hard. It's hard, but you have to. You have to do that. You have to spend some time thinking first and writing. First, get it on paper. How you feel. You have to embrace that anger. That anger, you have to embrace it. You have to go through it. You have to live it. Because if you don't, you're just going to bottle it up inside and you're never going to get rid of it. I mean, as you can see, I'm not angry with my father anymore. I experienced every piece of anger, and there was a lot. I mean, there were times I broke things. There were times I scribbled on paper and I screamed and I cried. And you have to allow yourself to feel it. You have to allow. I mean, there are people out there who tell you, just ignore it, just forget about it, blah, blah, blah. You can't. You can't do that. It's something that happened to you. So you have to allow yourself to be free and to experience all of those emotions, all of them. And then what comes understanding. Understand. Try to put yourself in that person's shoes. Understand why they would do something like that. And then you can begin the process of forgiving that person, not for their sake, but for yours. And forgiving is hard. And I'm not some Christian minister up here trying to tell people, forgive, and you know, no, I'm not. But it is important to just, so you can just let it go. So you can just let that part, now that you release that anger and you've allowed yourself to experience that emotion, you understand where that person has come from. Then you say, okay, I understand. And I know that this is why you did it. I forgive you for my sake so I can move on. That's how it is not going to happen overnight. So it's not a quick fix. But you have to do it. You want to be able to smile. You got to do the dirty work. It's healthy for you. It is healthy. It's healthy to get those and go in the woods and scream if you have to. It is good to get it out. Don't hold back. Don't hold back. Get it out so you can get rid of it and you can live a healthy life, even though those things still happen. But they won't burn you up inside with that fiery anger and bitterness that once happened. Because, I mean, I remember feeling that it was like a fire. I felt it was a fire in me, and I didn't want to be like that. I didn't want to be like that. I was like, I can't live the rest of my life like this. And, that's why I had to do what I had to do. I wanted to get rid of it. And I did. Wow. And people are like, how did you do that? He did all that stuff to you. I said, yeah, I did, but I'm not angry.
I can definitely tell you have such joy inside you. I can see that. You have such joy and happiness for people who have been through what you've been through, to strive to have that joy, to be able to move forward, to be able to let go, to forgive, and to live for themselves. Candace, thank you. Thank you for telling your story. And people listening at home, there's help out there. You're not alone in dealing with this. Listen to everything she has said. Write it down. If you're in a situation, please seek help. Whether it's going to the police, seeing a therapist, whatever you have to do, this is not just your battle. You have people who will back you. Mm-hmm. And Candace, before we go, people want to reach out to you. If they want to connect with you, what's the best way to do this?
Well, the best way, the all way, is to contact me on my website. All my information's there. And it's at CandaceNadineBreen.com. CandaceNadineBreen.com. All one word. And everything is there. Contact forms, number, everything.
And you can meet this person. You can meet her face-to-face. Once again, folks, it's the Rhode Island Authors Expo. It's happening December 7th, yep. 10 to 4. Mm-hmm. Grants, Rhode Island, Roads on the Pawtuxet. You can meet Candace. You can tell your story. Yep. Hopefully it helps.
Yes. Thanks so much.